You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Welcome to MLB.com Extras, the NL West. I'm Allison Futter from MLB.com, and the only thing really on anybody's mind at this point is the trade deadline, which is coming up in a few short days. And so I think that the Dodgers are going to be a very interesting team to keep your eye on because they need a lot of help in the starting rotation, and they could make more than one deal for a starting pitcher. So the Giants are kind of sniffing around. They could certainly use some help in their starting rotation. They're maybe a little less likely to make a deal. And then you have the Padres that are still trying to figure out who and what they are. And the Rockies might have some pieces that they could offer some other teams, but I imagine that they will probably stand pat. I am joined by one of my favorite columnists from MLB.com, Lyle Spencer, who is based in Southern California and is paying attention to all of the teams there. And Lyle, we're going to talk about the Dodgers, and I want to talk about the trade deadline, of course, which is coming up very soon. And I was making a list of pitchers, starting pitchers that I thought the Dodgers might be interested in, and I basically wrote down every pitcher that we've heard that might be available.
Right.
So I guess Hamels would be like number one, and then you go on from there, but they should be pretty much in on everybody, right?
Yeah, I think so. As we get closer to the deadline, I get the sense that the two guys everybody's been talking about for months might not be the guys that they're aiming at for various reasons. Hamels has had this recent stretch of difficulties, which I think has raised some red flags. And Cueto has some history of arm issues. And you know, obviously there's a significant difference in what you would have to give up for those guys versus guys deeper down the list, which has me thinking they might be looking at the second tier at this point.
And so who would you consider the second tier, like Kazmir, Mike Leake, second tier? Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah, those guys, and there are a few other guys people haven't mentioned. One, it was interesting to me, is Giovanni Gallardo, who's with the Rangers and is in his contract year. He'll be a free agent this winter, and he's had a very solid season with Texas. And, you know, it's just a question of if they decide they're out of the hunt. The problem with all American League teams at this point is pretty much nobody really eliminated. And so these next few days are going to be crucial for these teams to determine whether they're sellers or not. And I looking at the Rangers, I got to think that they realistically don't think they're going to have enough to make a push to, especially with the Angels kind of taken off the way they have now and the sense that the Astros are good enough to hold up. So, I got to think the Rangers would have Gallardo out there, and he's a guy who would be interesting in a lot of ways as kind of an ideal number three guy. The other guy you mentioned who I'm very intrigued by is Scott Kazmir, who I know very well. I covered with the Angels. I think he would be a tremendous fit with the Dodgers. And the interesting thing there, of course, is that Billy Beane has been known to deal guys like that for prospects not necessarily ready right now. And the Dodgers system is loaded with young pitchers who are a year, two, 3 years away. So that, to me, might be the most logical trade partner for the Dodgers. And I think Kazmir would be perfect for them in that number three spot.
Yeah, Kazmir, I would imagine, would be a hot commodity for a lot of teams. Would it shock you if the Dodgers made two deals, like to get two starting pitchers? It seems like they need it. I mean, of course, everybody needs starting pitching, but it seems like they're might be even in a more dire situation, depending on Brett Anderson's Achilles injury. So is two pitchers out of the question for one trade?
No, I don't think it is out of the question at all. And another thing that the Dodgers have is they have a lot of position players. And they have a surplus of outfielders, as everybody knows about. And they have a number of players that can move, as well as young arms. So, no, it wouldn't surprise me at all. I've always thought that the just the notion of a blockbuster that's been floated out there, something like Yasiel Puig for one of the Mets starters, ideally from the Dodgers' point of view, maybe Noah Syndergaard, that would be a real fascinating deal on so many levels. Those deals are hard to pull off, and ordinarily you don't like giving up an everyday player for a starting pitcher who goes every fifth day. But the Dodgers' situation with so many outfield options kind of changes that. And there's a sense that maybe Puig would be better off in a new place starting fresh. And to get one of those young Met guns would be a coup for the Dodgers. So, I don't even know if that's a realistic possibility, but it's certainly interesting to think about.
Oh, it is fascinating to talk about. So you think Yasiel Puig would be better off in New York City?
I know it sounds kind of crazy, but who knows? I mean, he might really thrive on that kind of electricity and energy and just a change of scenery. And importantly, knowing that he would be their guy. I think I've always felt that's been kind of part of the problem in L.A. is that they've had so many high-profile guys who wanted to be the guy, from Kemp and Ramirez, and you got Adrian Gonzalez, and you got Puig, and if he went to New York, there would be no question he would be the guy, unless David Wright came back to what he used to be, and I think Puig might thrive on that, on being the guy that everybody's looking to be the hammer in that lineup. So, it could conceivably turn him around, and the guy, everybody can see the unbelievable talent he has, but he's just seems to be sort of in decline for part of it, of course, is the injury issues he's had, but it just seems strange that he looked like a guy who was going to take that arc to greatness, and he's just leveled off, in the last year and a half or so, and it's just kind of puzzling.
Yeah, wow. I never even thought about him coming up in trade talks, but that would be interesting. I want to go back to Hamels just for a second with Cole Hamels. A lot of speculation has been like maybe the struggles that he's been having lately are because he's like in this rut, being on a Phillies team that is like headed toward catastrophic record, and that you just kind of can't really get your mind in and get that adrenaline and. I mean, do you think that there's anything to that? Do you think there's more to that than maybe perhaps that he's like has an injury that nobody knows about?
Yeah, I definitely think it could be that. I think losing the way he has these recent years, it has to weigh on a guy who's an elite athlete. I don't care what sport or what position you play, or you've been conditioned to win and compete. He's been there at the highest level and performed under the greatest pressures. So that's what it could be. It might not be anything physical. And if that's the case, then he would be certainly worth everything the Phillies seem to be demanding for him. But I don't think the Dodgers are secure enough in that. The two guys everybody wants are guys that I don't think they will move. And that, of course, is Corey Seager, who they definitely won't move because he's going to be a big-time star, whether it's at shortstop or third base. And the other guy is Julio Urias, the kid, the lefty from Mexico, who's just a dynamic talent whose upside is up there in that, I hate to say it, but it's up there in that Kershaw range. So, I can't see them moving either of those two guys. And if my sense has been the Phillies have been insisting on one of those guys for Hamels, and I just don't think the Dodgers would do that.
Yeah. When you win like once a week, I mean, it's brutal. Having covered teams that have done that, it's just like a guaranteed loss every time you take the field
and
have to lay on a guy.
It's depressing. Okay. Yeah, absolutely.
Zach Greinke. So let's talk. Okay, so now I'm in the category of, for those of us that remember Oral Hershiser's scoreless streak, and I am in that category, I remember it very clearly, which was like unbelievable, 60-plus innings of scoreless baseball. And so Zach Greinke is at 43 2/3. pretty amazing because it's not like, I mean, there's been a couple bad teams that he has done this against, but there have been a couple good teams, too, that he's held scoreless. So what? Where can you place what he's doing historically, the season that he's having? Is pretty unbelievable.
Well, yeah, it's right there with Curry Scheiser's. In fact, I was at that game where he broke the record in San Diego when he went 10 innings. And I think everybody was just astonished, first of all, that he got to that point and that he did what he did. And then, of course, he went on and was the hero of the postseason. It was one of those magical seasons. Greinke reminds me of Hershiser in a lot of ways. He doesn't have this 98-mile-an-hour fastball anymore, but he's just so smart and so precise, and he has so many things he can do with the ball. You know, he's probably in that Hershiser, Greg Maddux mold more than some of these guys in the past, like Clemens and, of course, Nolan Ryan, you know, very few those type guys. But he's just an artist, you know, and he does all of his study. You know, he's a kind of, you know, he's the most prepared guy. He has a plan, but he also has the ability to kind of freelance and go with his gut. And you know, he's just on this colossal roll, and you know, it's fun to watch. It's amazing to watch, and he could break that record against either the A's or Angels back at Dodger Stadium if he gets through the Mets this next start. So that's going to be really fascinating if it comes down to that.
Yeah, and given what the Dodgers did the year that Oral set that record, it could be a nice little omen for them.
That's a very good point. And the thing is, he hasn't been stretched out as much as Hershiser was. Hershiser, you know, at that time there wasn't as much reliance on bullpens, and so he was going 8 and 9 pretty much every time out there. So Greinke actually should be better preserved for October than Hershiser was, because Hershiser was a workhorse. And Greinke generally goes 7, sometimes 8, and they've done a nice job in not overextending him.
Chris, I hadn't read the Giants. I haven't perused the Giants website in just a couple days, and then I get on there and I read that Tim Lincecum has a hip condition, and attached to that is the word degenerative, which sends off alarm bells in some ways. And I know that the team is, you know, kind of downplaying it and saying that it's kind of common, and then they're not too worried, but that has to be a little bit alarming when you see the word degenerative.
Well, it's certainly alarming. I mean, when you see Bo Jackson have a degenerative hip condition, you know, one of the greatest athletes around, and he was brought down by that. On the other hand, there are players, particularly, especially pitchers, who've overcome worse or have continued to pitch with worse. So, you know, Tim, this is something that Tim might be able to survive. I'm not a doctor, but I have to think that this is a guy who will pitch again. He's been so resilient, you know, tougher than people realize, you know, over the years because of his size. You know, it's not easy to do what he does out there. But at the same time, this might continue the tough transition he's been enduring, you know, with his loss of velocity, because, you know, what may have caused some of his hip condition is that impossibly long stride he takes when he releases each pitch. And so just to deal with all these physical things, it's definitely going to be a challenge for him.
So I know that he's not really talking about it. The doctor's not talking about it. There's certain restrictions that they have because he's not giving anybody any permission to speak about it specifically.
Yeah.
So at this point, he's visited or going to be visiting a hip specialist, and he's had some cortisone shots. Is that where we're at with this?
Yes, and he's supposedly going to get off and start throwing again here in a few days. That's always reassuring to see somebody throw and maybe get off a mound a little bit after that. But how soon he'll actually pitch competitively again, it's too early to tell.
So moving on to other rotation situations, Matt Cain. Okay, so not really great results since he's returned. And, 5.06 ERA, but do we need to wait more? I mean, he's missed a lot of time. So is this a situation where we should probably hold off judgment until we see a little bit more of a sample size?
Yeah, let's hold off at least for a few more hours. He's been starting today in San Diego. So, but yes, he's, when you have a track record like his, got to give him the benefit of the doubt, see how he does. I personally believe he's started to look a little bit more, he looks a little bit more like himself with each time out. But there again, there's another guy who has to adjust. He's, you know, he's maybe lost a little bit of zip off the fastball, and so he has to be more of a pitcher.
Peavy, however, Jake Peavy, so he's been doing well. I guess I've been more suspicious, just cautiously suspicious when it comes to Peavy, just because of what his ailments were with the back. And, I mean, often those are hard to overcome, but he's actually been doing pretty well.
He has been. Well, there's a guy, Allison, who does know how to pitch. He's had to deal with, not being a real flame. He wasn't a flamethrower to begin with, but he could overpower guys at the start of his career. Now he has to trick them, and he's very good at it. He's, being the competitor he is, he's not going to give in on any pitch, and he'll make that pitch as inventively as possible. So, I think that largely explains what how he's done well so far.
And the Giants, regardless, I mean, I have like Lincecum, he's got an issue. Matt Cain not doing well. Jake Peavy is doing well. Tim Hudson returned from disabled list didn't do so well. But regardless of all of that, the Giants are winning some baseball games, and they're obviously contenders, and they are the World Series champs. So I guess overall, do they feel pretty good about where they are? It's just weird because usually when there's question marks in the rotation, things aren't going so well. But the Giants have actually been winning some games. So are they feeling pretty good about things right now?
Well, they feel real good about things, especially with the trade deadline coming up. I mean, it seems like every year the Giants are in contention. They do something. Maybe it doesn't always work, but most of the time it does, which is why they have these three World Series trophies in 5 years. So July 22nd, today's date, it's going to be interesting to see what happens over the next few days until the 31st.
Yeah, so that's what I want to ask you. I mean, it seems like they would be more tweakers than certainly, like, of all the teams in the division, of all the reporters that I've talked to, I think the Giants are in the best situation to just maybe add, like, a supplemental piece that could sort maybe a bullpen arm or just somebody that can sort of fortify what's already a strong team. Would you envision that being the case, like, at the trade deadline, like something not terribly exciting, but maybe something that can help the team?
Yeah, well, they may not go for an ace, but they'll probably look real hard at a starting pitcher who can maybe go to the sixth or seventh inning. And in this day and age, that's close to an ace. So they've been linked repeatedly to Mike Leake of the Reds, somebody like that. And David Price probably not, but a Mike Leake, they'd be probably pretty happy with a guy like that to bolster the rotation. And then there, because Angel Pagan has been hurting, the center fielder, they may look for a center field type guy who can, provide, some depth at that spot.
Yeah, I would think that the Giants are probably salivating over the amount of starting pitchers that seem to be available or could be available. I mean, like you said, you've got the upper tier guys that a lot of teams might shy away from, but you had that second tier, a team like the Giants, especially if it's like a rental, but they have to be pretty excited about what might be out there in another week.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned the word rental. They tend to avoid rentals. Brian Sabian is very much against rentals, but if they can get somebody, if they can get somebody who they can control for like another year or two, that's optimum for them. But the rental type guys, you say something like I just said, and then there's an exception comes along. we'll have to see what happens if an exception does come along.
Yeah, especially since there have been, like, a lot of these starting pitchers have actually had a really bad couple of weeks. A lot of these guys, like Cueto, Hamels, all of a sudden they're not doing so well, but I still think it's going to be a pretty open season for all these guys. Anyway, Chris, thank you so much, and we'll talk to you next week.
Oh, no problem. Thank you, Allison.
Here with my friend Corey Brock, who is covering the Padres as usual for our wonderful website. And Corey, I want to talk a lot about the trade deadline that's coming up, but first, I just want to talk in general because I don't know what to make of these Padres. So maybe you can help me, because just when I think I have them figured out, and by that I mean that they're not a very good team, then they string together like a pretty nice winning streak. And as we're taping this, they had just lost to the Giants, but before that they won 5 straight. So tell me what's going right with these guys and why they seem to be so streaky, I guess.
Well, unlike you, I've stopped trying to figure them out, Allison, because I can't seem to get a good read on what they are from week to week or day to day. It's been interesting to watch. This whole season has been a kind of a wild roller coaster ride, I guess, with obviously far more valleys than there have been peaks. But, yeah, I had a nice little win streak there, season best 5-game winning streak, and not coincidentally, you know, this coincided with Matt Kemp really heating up at the plate. You know, I know, Allison, we talked so much, even going back to spring training, about what he could potentially mean for the Padre offense. And, you know, got off to a good start in April, struggled in May and June, but has sort of found his swing again, his confidence in the month of July, and has done a very nice job of driving the ball. Had a big 2-run home run to the deepest part of the ballpark here at Petco Park the other day. And yeah, that's what they need, though. They need all that to kind of get going. The pitching generally has been very good, so they've sort of been waiting for both those components to kind of click at the same time. And you know, for the first 3+ months of the season, that hasn't happened.
So, I mean, even though, yes, they've been winning lately, but it's still, you know, not a very good record when you're talking about where they are being contenders, even for that second wild card spot. So this is what I find just so fascinating, is that all the names that we heard about in the offseason and just this team that they assembled that was so interesting. Now you're seeing a lot of these names as guys that might be trading. Who would you say is mostly on the block? I mean, you know, it's hard to pinpoint, like, who actually could be dealt, but are there some guys that you think would be, like, really, really interesting trade chips for a lot of teams?
Yeah, and it may not be the most marquee guys either. I mean, I think the easy answer, you could assume Justin Upton, who will be a highly sought-after free agent after the season. I would imagine a lot of teams would like to have his bat for 2 months, but, he equates to a rental, Allison, and a lot of teams are might not want to forfeit a lot in terms of compensation and prospects for a 2-month rental, thinking that you may not have a chance to re-sign him. So, if he stays put, I wouldn't be at all surprised. But guys like Will Venable, you know, a left-handed hitting outfielder who could play all 3 outfield positions, can run. I think a guy like that has some value. Craig Kimbrel, the closer, you know, he's under team control. I would imagine they're getting a lot of hits on him. And same with Ian Kennedy. The starting rotation has been pitching very well, you know, the last 6 weeks. He'll be a free agent at the end of the year. So, you know, I think the Padres may be looking at a couple guys, especially, like, let's say, in terms of Kennedy, who doesn't figure to be part of their future moving forward, that maybe you look to recoup a few pieces now. Maybe that can help you this year and help you beyond. So, but, you know, the funny thing, Allison, is, like, and I really think that the second wild card has maybe kind of ruined the trade deadline, in a sense that, these teams are going to, I think they're going to push these decisions right up until, you know, the 11th hour there on the 31st, you know, just because you're trying to figure out what you are, who you're going to be. And just when you think you have it figured out, maybe you reel off 5 wins in a row, and then just as quickly you could lose 5 in a row. So it's just trying to figure out where you are, if you're realistically in this thing. And, you know, mathematically, the Padres are.
Yeah, and I would imagine that it's kind of got to be hard for A.J. Preller. The moves that he made, the things that he did, I mean, we've had lots of conversations on the fact that, you know, he definitely had the most interesting offseason, not necessarily the best, very controversial when he dismissed Freddie Black. I mean, there's been, you know, there's a lot of eyes that are on him. Would it be hard for him to be a seller at the trade deadline, considering the kind of expectations that he and his staff set by putting this roster together?
Yeah, I don't know if it's hard for him, or maybe he's pragmatic enough to just kind of decide that, okay, hey, this isn't working. We need to try something else. But, you know, there's other components involved here. You know, as you know, this is a, you know, you're trying to win back your fan base. They did such a nice job of that in the offseason without playing a single game by sort of recapturing the imagination and, you know, the livelihood of the fan base by, you know, with all these moves they make. And now if you want to turn around and tear it all down, I just think that may send a wrong message. You know, this is a franchise that, you know, is trending upward, I think. You know, they've done a lot of things with the stadium. They have a beautiful new scoreboard, the largest in the National League. They're going to host the All-Star game here next year. I think you sort of have to be careful on a PR front a little bit. But ultimately, you know, you got to make the team better, and some of these decisions will rate as tough moving forward. They just sent down Will Middlebrooks to AAA. He was their opening day third baseman. He was one of the guys they traded for this winter. So these decisions aren't easy, but I think, you know, they have probably have some contingencies in place of guys that they think they can move, the guys they want to move, and guys maybe certainly they'd like to hang on to. But I think everything's such a fluid situation. But, you know, if we've seen anything from A.J. Preller, and, you know, the sample size is still pretty small, but I think we've seen a willingness and a want to improve the team at no matter the cost, you know, whether that be prospects or moving guys off the major league rosters. So, you know, I would have to think that he has the blessing of the front office to move forward and make some major decisions here moving toward the trade deadline.
So I have a little note down here. Would they dare trade James Shields? He's pretty safe, right? I mean, that would take something crazy in order for them to trade him. Am I right on that?
Yeah, I don't see how they better themselves by really doing that. You know, this is the guy that signed the largest contract in franchise history in February, and it's still, you know, by no means is it a team-friendly deal, but, you know, it's a lot better deal than, you know, what the Cubs gave John Lester, for example. And I still think that, Shields is a very good pitcher. He's very durable. He makes all his starts. He's been roughed up maybe just a couple times, so mostly you know what you're getting from the guy. And, you know, they might be a little bit more apt to, you know, trading someone like Andrew Cashner and maybe recoup some pieces and maybe even recoup a starting pitcher, thinking that especially if you're going to trade a starter and maybe you're going to lose Ian Kennedy eventually, that you have to find a way to fill these innings at the major league level. So maybe guys that are going to be in their rotation in the second half in 2016 aren't even here yet. So, you know, I could see them moving. You know, Tyson Ross is a very interesting piece. I truly think Allison, he's one of the better pitchers in the National League and still kind of slides under the radar a little bit. But, you know, I think that they won't move him. But, you know, Cashner could be a guy that they look to move at some point.
Yeah, the one thing I think we've learned over time is that there are a few untouchables, but everybody has a price. I mean, you know, you could be swayed if you're just kind of blown away and you're in a situation like the Padres with an offer. I mean, I wouldn't think that anybody's off the board, even a really good starting pitcher. If you can just net, you know, if you can steal, you know, a bunch of players from somebody else, I guess they would have to think about that.
Well, yeah, and you're right. Yeah, the term untouchable, I kind of laugh at. And I just, you know, I think that as a general manager, I think you have to go into this process, not just now, but, you know, every month of the year, you know, with your eyes open and your ears open and have a willingness to trade with anyone, and that includes within the division. I know Kevin Towers told me several years ago that, you know, if you truly think this is a move that can better your team, you don't really worry about the in-division stuff. I mean, sure, there's maybe a little bit of a fear, Allison. Let's say you move a position player within a division and, you know, he gets 45 at-bats against you and he could cause some damage there. But, like, you know, you at some point you can't be so worried about what you're giving up but more concerned about what you're getting. So, yeah, untouchables, I don't know if there is one on the roster. I don't know if there should be one on the roster. I think you have to be willing and amenable to listen to offers on everybody and weigh them equally and then make a decision from there.
Well, we will keep our eye on it. Thank you so much, Corey, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right. Thanks, Allison.
I am on my way to Cooperstown, where I will be meeting my friend Steve Gilbert, who is also in Cooperstown, covering Randy Johnson on behalf of the Arizona Diamondbacks website for our lovely MLB.com. So, Steve, this is very cool. And Randy Johnson, I just never get tired of talking about him because all anybody talks about is, like, what a happy guy he is in retirement. And so now we're on the eve of, like, basically seeing happy Randy Johnson. That'll be kind of cool, huh?
Yeah, you know, it's been interesting to watch him as he's gone through retirement. It's just, he's far more relaxed now. And he was just so intense. He just felt that that was the way he had to be successful. And he always pitched with that chip on his shoulder. And that's what he felt like made him great and pushed him to continue to work and try to get better. Even when he was winning all those Cy Young Awards, he always was trying to get better and better. So watching him in retirement, he did a press conference the other day with us at the ballpark, and he was laughing. And, you know, someone tried to cut off the questions at one point. He said, "I've got all the time in the world. I'm retired now." So it was just it's such a change from what we're used to seeing from him that it's just been kind of fun to watch. And hopefully he enjoys this weekend because, you know, it's a culmination of everything that he worked so hard for. So hopefully that continues for him this weekend.
So it's and this is a big deal for the Diamondbacks organization, obviously, being such a young team, not a ton of, you know, well, no Hall of Famers. So I guess every, like, organization is going. Is there a big, huge contingent of Diamondbacks people that is making a trek out there?
Yes, there are a lot of current Diamondback front office people. He also invited Jerry Colangelo, who was the initial owner of the Diamondbacks, the one who convinced Randy to come to Arizona back in 1999. So Randy wanted him to be there, so he's going to be there, so that'll be interesting. And so you're right, it is a big deal for an organization there. It's very rare to have a Hall of Famers.
Yeah, I mean, it could be a while, too, there's more.
Yeah, it could be a long while. And a lot of organizations, you know, have to wait a long time. And, you know, I don't know who would be next in the pipeline. Maybe, you know, we're talking way down the road, but, you know, if Paul Goldschmidt were to continue to play the way he's playing for, you know, the next 10 years or so, then maybe you could start talking about that. That's how rare it is.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. It's coming from Houston. I mean, I think there's a 50-50 shot that Jeff Bagwell will make it in. I don't think it's a guaranteed thing. And so then we're looking at maybe Jose Altuve if he continues on the way he's going. So you just never really know. So you have to really enjoy it, you know, while you can. You know, from a Seattle standpoint, I would imagine there's going to be – I mean, he had a good relationship with them, right? I mean, I know they traded him away, and that was kind of traumatic for him. But I would think that there'd be – you know, some good feelings towards Seattle. I mean, 10 years there. He said he felt like that's where, you know, he grew up, and he loved that city and so into the music scene. He's got some good memories from there too, doesn't he?
He has tremendous memories, and he said at his press conference that it was a real agonizing decision for him to try to decide whether to go in as a Mariner or as a Diamondback, and he just felt like he had, you know, the four Cy Youngs in Arizona, the World Series in Arizona kind of pushed it over the top. He said, you know, he wanted to make sure that people knew that he was going to acknowledge the Mariners in his speech and the people that that helped him there. And he also wanted those people to be there. So he's invited some of their front office people and ownership group to be there as well. So certainly it was a tough decision for him because that's where he got started. He had a lot of good relationships there. And it sounded like, at least listening to him talk, that it was a hard decision for him to choose between the two organizations as to, you know, whether to go in with a Diamondback cap on or a Mariners cap.
So the other topic that we need to just touch on a bit, I mean, we have, you know, in between the, you got the All-Star break and then the game, obviously, and then the Hall of Fame inductions. And then there's this thing called the trade deadline, which is a huge focus this year. But I'm getting the impression that the Diamondbacks are kind of, like, not really in a position to be active either way. Certainly not buyers, you know, not to poo-poo on your organization, but it doesn't seem like they're really going to be contenders. Also, not really a lot to maybe give away as far as, you know, trying to fortify for 5 years down the road. So do you figure that they'll just kind of be sort of quiet?
Yeah, you know, I think it'd be interesting to see. The recent losing streak has maybe pushed them a little bit closer to a seller mode, but they don't want to do anything. They feel like, you know, they're kind of building towards something. So they still see their window here in the next couple of years. So it wouldn't be something, you know, dramatic, like some kind of dramatic sell-off. But maybe a veteran here, or if they could unload a contract here or there. But certainly I think that they don't want to do anything to harm the kind of the inventory they've built up recently
or rebuilt in their farm system under Dave Stewart. They don't want to, you know, mess with that for just trying to compete for 1 year.
Yeah, probably pretty smart. So, well, Steve, enjoy Cooperstown. I look forward to seeing you, and thanks for your time.
Allison, it's always my pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. Here with Thomas Harding, our intrepid reporter who covers the Rockies for MLB.com, and it's been a really long time, Thomas, since we have talked, and now we are almost upon the trade deadline. A little bit to go, but it's never too early to talk about that fun time of year when reporters lose a little bit of sleep and maybe some years off their life. But fans really get into it. So with the Rockies, you have all kinds of players that are available, but I'm sort of thinking that they're going to be really sort of quiet and boring and maybe not very active this trade deadline. Do you agree?
I don't know what's going to happen, to be honest, especially with the new general manager and Jeff Breidich here, but you still have the same ownership group. They have some big pieces they could move. They have some smaller pieces they could move. I am interested to see exactly what decisions they make and what will the Rockies be in the future. You know, is this going to be an organization that maybe takes a step or two back and picks up a few parts here, but basically builds with what it has? Or are they going to kind of try to stick with parts that they still have, meaning guys like a Troy Tulowitzki or Carlos Gonzalez, and try to build around those parts that way? So whenever rumors come up, and obviously a lot of things come up that we as reporters have to check out, but so far in this deadline, when rumors have come up, they've gone almost nowhere immediately. It's been strange, but when I talked to Jeff Breidich a couple of days ago, he was saying it will probably be the next week or so before things start kind of crystallizing and the teams that really want to make a move really begin putting their offers together.
Yeah, it's kind of weird to think about a team like the Rockets. When you say, like, do they want to take two steps back to look toward the future? I mean, that's sort of like a Braves thing to do, where the Braves, like, sort of know how to stay relevant year to year, even if they take a couple of years where they do have to take a step back in order to make sure that they're not, like, you know, setting themselves back like 5 or more years, like so many teams do. But the Rockies, it just seems like they've been bad for so long that they kind of they want to be good, but are they still trying to figure out what their identity is?
Well, I think they're trying to figure out how to get pitching in here. That's been the issue as long as there's been a franchise in Denver, is how do you pitch here? How do you acquire the pitching? How do you pay for the pitching? And that will be perpetual with them. The difference between the Braves, between the Rockies and a lot of other teams is, even some of the bad Rockies teams, you can put together a quality offense here. I'm looking at their farm system, and there are some parts coming up in that system that it looks like you can sustain a pretty good offensive lineup, but the question always gets back to pitching. They are trying to develop some pitching, but you also have to acquire it. You know that you're not going to get it on the free agent market because this is not the highest paying franchise. And a lot of the pitchers, when they are approached by the Rockies, suddenly the price goes up because you know that you're devoting part of your career to pitching in a place that's very difficult to pitch. So how do you acquire that pitching? Often it's through trades, or you develop it. Free agency tends to be out. So there's a puzzle here that's a little bit different from other places.
So I'm looking at some of the names that could be traded. I mean, I guess John Axford would be, like, if you had to pick one, that would be, like, a likely candidate, even if there are none. It would be a guy like that. I would think maybe you could get something, because he's got to be a commodity for, like, a contending team, as opposed to, you know, these huge contract guys that we have talked about ad nauseum at Tulo and Cargo. I mean, you know, we know where they stand on that. But a guy like Axford, I mean, he could be interesting to another team.
Yeah, he could be, and I've heard of some American League teams that have looked at him. There was a report saying the Tigers were among the teams. I believe that the Toronto Blue Jays could be a good place for him. I mean, he is Canadian, and obviously they like that type of player. And here's the deal with Axford, too, is that because I think it's a matter of 2 days, if I'm not mistaken, he is still arbitration eligible going into next season, so he doesn't become a free agent, so the team controls him. So that makes him an attractive target.
Yeah, no doubt. I didn't even realize that. So let's talk about some players that are on the team and probably will be on August 1st, Chad Bettis. So his elbow is only inflamed instead of something worse. So I guess that's kind of a sigh of relief for the organization that's nothing worse than that.
Yes, it is a sigh of relief, and I know that there was some worry on the part of the manager, Walt Weiss. And the thing with Bettis is he went from reliever to starter, so he was a reliever last season until kind of toward the end of the year when he started a handful of games at the AAA level. But all of a sudden, he's gone from that to a pretty heavy innings workload here. And I think the inflammation also kind of helped them decide, hey, how are we going to control this guy's innings? Well, when you have elbow inflammation, then you can control when the guy comes back. So I'm looking to see what happens after he gets back, how much he pitches after he does return. He's a guy that they believe there's a future with him as a starting pitcher. So what they're going to have to do is just make sure that he doesn't blow out the elbow this year and just manage him coming into next year after, you know, the move of taking him from the bullpen to the rotation.
I wanted to talk about this rain delay in San Diego, which made me laugh, made everybody laugh. But then when I saw that they were playing the Rockies, it just made perfect sense. The first thing I thought was, you know, this team is cursed when it comes to weather. And then there was a whole story about it on Rockies.com about how the Rockies seem to, you know, have the bad weather in Denver, and then they take it with them on the road. So were you just, I mean, that had to have been like just one of those things where you think, what is going on with this team this year that they're actually being delayed now in San Diego for rain?
Well, that game actually was rained out, and they're going to have to make it up in September. So, yeah, it's crazy. It was the first rain out in San Diego since 2004. When we were out there earlier this year with the Rockies, I believe in April, L.A. had its biggest rainfall one day. I think it set a 100-year broke a 100-year-old record for rain. So wherever the Rockies go, the cloud follows them. And it is absolutely crazy. These guys have probably perfected sitting out rain delays.
You know, that's funny because California needs the rain, so maybe the Rockies should just relocate for an entire season and only play in California. That would, like, solve all the environmental woes out there.
Yeah, I think so. It would solve a lot of them, although, you know, the roads and bridges would have a hard time with it and mudslides and everything else. But, yeah, at least it would address part of the problem. How about that?
Okay, and then one final thing, just quickly. I love the random stuff you come up with. And LaTroy Hawkins, who, of course, is a dear friend of both of us. So I like talking about LaTroy. But I love that he's the last active pitcher, according to the story that I saw on Rockies.com, the last active pitcher to face Michael Jordan during Jordan's Double-A trek in 1994. Is that, do I have that right?
Yes, that is correct. And in fact, it's funny too, because it's kind of a reunion. I was covering the Memphis Chicks at the time. I was covering them when Jordan was playing in the league, and actually had written a couple of things about LaTroy Hawkins back then, and of course followed that one strange year where Jordan was in the minors.
That's outstanding. Oh, Thomas, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much. We will we'll talk to you next week.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thanks. So that was a quick look at the NL West.